G'day and welcome to the Farms Advice podcast for 2021. If you tuned in 2020, thank you very much. It was a cracker year for the podcast, starting out and just finding our feet. Today for episode one, we've got James Walker hailing from Longreach in Queensland. We'll be talking about diversification, how you do it, what he's up to, what motivates him, and the different projects he's been working on. So I'll waste no more time and let's get into it. Welcome to 2021 Farms Advice podcast. To start us off for the year, we've got James Walker. James, how you going, mate?
Good, Jack. Good. Good to connect with you this morning, and to all your listeners, good morning. And hope the year has been kicked off well.
Absolutely. How's it looking up where you are, Longreach?
Mate, it's quite sporadic, the rain up here. We've got, a pretty freakish sort of amount of rain up here. We've had 10 inches since November. So for the area, that's pretty good. We're heads above the district for rainfall. And it was just one freak storm that came through. It was like a bombing raid. It just sort of went from light grey to light blue to yellow. And then just when we got to our place, it just let go and it went red and there was some black in it. So we got three to 3.5 inches overnight. And then on the other side of it, it just lifted off again. So it was like a bombing raid. That's the only way I can explain it. And it kicked the season off in December pretty well. So it's green here, mate. A lot of weed because we're repairing from, all those years of drought. Because we're exclusion fence, we've got some pretty good, control over kangaroos eating it all. So, yeah, so it's all coming away quite well. And good to get home. Just got home from Brisbane checking one of our daughters into school for the first time. So, traumatic experience, but it's all for the best. So, so it's good to get back and probably get on top of a few weeds.
Absolutely. Well, best of luck to her. What's it like up in Longreach? I haven't actually been up there. Is it flat or you got a bit of hills?
Mate, we're pretty flat. So it's just gently undulating sort of country. It's all sort of alluvial downs, and we've got Mitchell grass. So it's all fairly bare. There's in the creeks that, there's no permanent water really, apart from some major, water holes on the Thompson River, which is what Longreach is named after, a long reach of river. So the water hole is about 10 kilometres we go skiing on. And that's how the name came about. And the Barcoo, of course, which go into the Cooper down around Junda. It's pretty open and flat. Like, you don't really need choppers unless you've got a whole heap of scrub, which is the Gidgee that we sort of get up here. It's pretty good. It's all open sort of downs country. So we can get around on motorbikes and spot things from a long way away. Not bad. It's our average rainfall 16, 18 inches, like that sort of range. But the volatility of that, in the last sort of 20 years that I've been home, we've had anywhere from, 42 inches in 1 year down to only 2 inches. So to stack up a production system on that, you've got to be fairly agile and flexible. So one season isn't the same. It's not repeatable like, it would be in the UK or in some parts of, the States or an irrigation farm. We've got to just harness what we get when we get it. So that's why we're fairly flexible and agile up here in terms of farming. Or we've got, property spread, in different rainfall zones. So that's sort of how we tackle it up here, mate.
Absolutely. Well, it's perfect to have you on the podcast today. What caught my eye was, is it Condonine? Is that how I'm pronouncing it?
What's that, sorry?
The Condonine Award.
Oh, yeah. God, you've got me now. Condinan.
Right.
Yeah.
So in 2017, you won the award for diversification on farm.
Yeah, mate. It was quite interesting. The Condinan Group, which is a great group based out of Western Australia, partnered with, ABC and National Farmers Federation. They sort of got national awards every year. They phoned me to sponsor it. I said, oh, look, I'm just a startup, sort of software business. So I wouldn't be in a position to sponsor it yet, but give me a few years. And they said, oh, what are you up to out there anyway? And I just sort of told them what we do. And they said, all right, well, is it all right if we enter you into the awards? Because, So that's how it sort of got roped into that one, Matt. So it's just excellence and diversification. So, not relying solely on, I suppose, one income stream out of a farm and being trapped by it, just spreading the wings a little bit and trying different sort of innovations and different business streams.
Where do you come from in agriculture? Like, where's your background? If you just talk us through that, of how it all started. Is it through the family or you kicked it off yourself?
Yeah, mate. So how we got into farming was my grandfather drew a ballot back in, 1923 or something like that. And anyway, all he had was a swag and a bundle of cash. And he jumped on a train, came north of Longreach to a place called Muttaburrah and settled on a place called Ingleside. And back in those days, they had pastoral inspectors. So you had to develop the country to keep up with the expectations of the crown and develop those blocks. So he set about sort of developing it all up because he was close to town, he got on a few boards and a few committees and got to know all the local agents. So he used to trade a lot of sheep. And with that, his four other brothers came up into the area, up into the Longreach sort of district, and they sort of, I suppose, form what was a bit of a network and just built and helped each other build their farming enterprises. So one stage I was shearing up to, I think it was 200,000 sheep in a calendar year. And so when the wool boom hit, they're in a pretty good position. So how I got it, I suppose we're fifth generation. We were Illawarra Dairy Shorthorn, dairies down around Bangalow and in Byron Bay there early on to supply, all the sort of the coastal districts in Brisbane. And so that was at the turn of the century, last century. And then, mate, how I got into it, I sort of went away to school and thought I'd come back for a year to, just to pay back the dues from, being away at school and then going away and doing commerce or business or finance or whatever I would at uni. And then, I got roped into the business and haven't looked back, just been building, I suppose, knowledge and skills and talent in farming ever since. Always did want to go back, but then I decided, we've got a bit on here. So they were getting thrown around by the droughts and the isolation of just having properties here. So I thought, all right, if we're going to make something of this, I better stick around and do everything by correspondence. So that's what I did, man. I'm married with three kids and we've been through three bouts of succession since I've got home. So my grandfather and then my uncle and then my direct family, we sort of have all been through that succession. So we're just now all unencumbered. We've got our own property here just outside of Longreach. It's 20,000 acres, and that's where we were cited for the excellence and diversification, I suppose.
Beautiful. So for your property near Longreach, is it your main source of income?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it is. What we recognised was we did all the exclusion fencing. We tapped the premium market, so we're all organically accredited and we're a global animal partnership accredited as well, so we can get our produce into Whole Foods. I set up a lease arrangement with a larger pastoral company, like a corporate, so it's a floating lease whereby it sort of takes in the variability of rainfall out here, so it's good for all parties. Then we've got agritourism up here as well. My brother runs that. And he gets about sort of 3,000 people through a year on the farm and just sort of highlighting the stories of farming and just showing them what it's like to farm up here. Haven't been able to do that though because we haven't had much stock of recent years, but last year it was great and people get an understanding on how it all works. And the other diversification piece was the solar farm that we put in up here. So in 2016, in the roaring drought when everyone was leaving town. We've got this block that's close to town. We thought, all right, well, what about putting a solar farm on to try and keep people back? Because the school went from 200 kids to 100 pretty much overnight since the drought. Couldn't employ anyone and everything was closing up. So we went to, Arena, went to some large corporates and said, all right, let's set up a solar farm in Long Ranch. So yeah, it was a $32 million build. And so we get a bit of income out of that as well, which is great. And Clemsey Finance Corporation, Canadian Solar, and now Foresight Group sort of own the solar farm. We just get the lease payments out of it. That's sort of three of the things that were sort of innovative and did during the drought. But the main pursuit that I sort of undertook was after a Nuffield scholarship, where I was fusing, where my project was to fuse production metrics and financial metrics to give a view of how the farm's tracking, I suppose, to gauge, you know, the trajectory of the farms making money or sort of going backwards. Financially, I wanted to build some software for that. So we started AgriHive. And to kick it off, we had some summits, one in Longreach here, one in the UK, over in Westminster in London, all profiling, I suppose, the gaps in financial literacy, business management and farming across the north with the beef industry. And then over in the dairy industry over in the UK. And then we came back to sort of Australia and did another summit in Parliament House here in Queensland, based on capital. So how do you access different and alternative forms of capital, where we just got CEOs and specialists from outside of agriculture to come in and actually profile what they do in their industries or their, you know, sectors, and then bring it back to agriculture and try and decipher it and pull it apart. So that I suppose informed our build for AgriHive, which was we built a product called Farm Echo. And what it does is it pulls in all the financial elements of your enterprise and then gives you a picture on how you're performing. So it's been quite cool, mate. So that's the other sort of alternative, industry or approach we had to farming in Longreach that I suppose got us that award. When I sort of look at, diversifying, I suppose what I look at is I sort of look at investments in terms of revenue generating assets. So, you know, what is a revenue generating asset that can give me the best bang for buck? So is it investing in cattle at that time? Is it software? Is it, you know, buying another property? Is it buying a bus for, you know, the tourism? Is it unlocking some land for more solar development? So you sort of look at spending money in terms of, you know, will it generate revenue, and what do I need to work out, how much revenue will generate, you know, the return on investment. So that's the sort of lens we look through when we make investments and how we sort of attack it. So the program we've got is being used in Northern Australia at the moment. Currently we're on a capital raise. So we're in late stages of raising some considerable cash to actually have a real crack.
What will that cash allow you to do?
Mate, so what we want to do is, I suppose it's a very manual process at the moment. We want to automate it. You see, these bloody Longreach flies are still here, mate. No matter if it rains or doesn't, they still stick around. What we intend to do there is to actually build it out for more, I suppose, enterprises. So we'll build it out for not only beef cattle, which is what it's used for at the moment, sheep and wool, meat, sheep, goats, and then all the other commodities across the spectrum. And so it's just about scale. So instead of just being, specific for one region or one industry, we want to go across all commodities and be quite expansive with what we offer and how we do it. So mate, the investment's about building the team, and I suppose pulling the vision all together and coding it. So, So it's about, you know, coordinating, you know, that vision into reality. And that's, you know, that's what we need the funding for, and then market it. So a lot of these sort of startups have a lot of gusto in building it, but it's actually the marketing that's missing, which is good that you've got a good background on that and understand that, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like for the agriculture industry, so vast, and we are spread out physically. So being able to tap into those different markets isn't always easiest and costly as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, mate. So I studied, you know, it's sort of doing everything through correspondence. I did, I've got, you know, a whole heap of diplomas that, you know, if I need sort of a skill, I'd go and pick up. So I did marketing, finance, and a few others just to try and get an understanding on how to do it. And then just a lot of reading, I suppose. And of late, podcasts have been brilliant in sort of, transferring knowledge from, one person or one source to another. So, yeah, so these podcasts, I commend you on sort of starting this up. It's brilliant that you've got this going and you got some great momentum here. So, mate, that's pretty much how we roll and how we got going. And it's just all about managing the finances to coordinate, you know, how fast you run and which direction and then pulling it all together in the holistic view that you've got in terms of your business and how you create the wealth in it. So, I wouldn't encourage everyone to sort of diversify. It might, you know, instead of diversifying, they might like to optimize their business. So that's about, you know, sort of penetrating the value chain. That's about, you know, cutting your costs. That's about, you know, sort of developing your capital works into running more. But it's also about balancing, I suppose, you know, whether your asset, your farm can handle that. So, you know, in terms of the trajectory of, you know, the financial trajectory of a farm, that's fine to sort of coordinate and log that. But it's also the natural capital in a farm as well. So part of the capital raise is also address that as well. So, you know, we might be going well financially, but, you know, how long can we do that for? Is it sustainable? So if we can actually enact a metric to show the natural capital on a farm and whether it's improving or declining or regenerating or degenerating, I suppose that would be a great metric, because I think naturally all farmers are keen to look after their patch, but sometimes we don't have the tools to understand exactly how to do that or how we're affecting it. So I think if it's not a governance process, you know, the government sort of push onto a farmer to say, all right, you need to do this, you need to do that, I think naturally, you know, if we've got the understanding of what our operation's doing and our activities, well, then we can change them, and improve them. But I don't think it's through lack of desire to do that. I think it's through just the metrics. So part of the capital raise is to do that as well, to actually, you know, have an impact on the longevity of farming. So it's quite exciting, man. I can't wait to kick it off this year and get going. And we've already started building the team based on the capital raise. So it'll be brilliant.
Perfect. So is the team, are they working from home or you got a little office space?
Yeah, we'll have, I'd say what we'll do is at the moment, what we're sort of working to do is to have a headquarters.
Yep.
With sort of hot desks. As opposed to, I suppose, just having people work from home and catching up in coffee shops. That's probably what I've been doing for the last sort of 4 or 5 years. So, it's been like a cage fight, you know, to try and get this startup going. And every twist and turn, you've got to be able to buckle and bend with them. So it's been extremely lean to kick things off, just to prove the concept. But we've got a few good contracts here now that, you know, have proved up that we're on the right track. We've got some really good corporate partners as well that have sort of said that they're extremely interested and and have sort of signed some arrangement with us, you know, in the event that we've finalised the capital raise. So it's pretty good. So yeah, I think we will have a bit of a headquarters or a presence somewhere. I'd love it to be in Longreach, you know, in the regions. So sort of working towards that, but ultimately, you know, we've got to go where the connectivity is and where the networks are. So yeah, so I mean, yeah, we'll make that decision on, I suppose, the ability to scale, you know, quickly without. But I mean, COVID's been brilliant, Jack, as you can understand. Just the ability to negotiate and do deals over Zoom has changed the face of how we operate business now. So, you know, beforehand you'd have to put a face to a name and go and meet them and have a coffee and see the body language and see the intent of their firm. But these days you can sort of, you know, there's a willingness to execute over the phone or over Zoom. And so I think that's what's been great out of COVID, this sort of digital literacy that everyone's got in farming. So it's, you know, it's going quite well.
I think 2021 is going to be huge for farmers actually coming online for like online livestock auctioneering. That's been a huge one for over the last year or two from drought also, but also spurred on from COVID, not being able to get into sale yards as much. And also for your business carrying on the digitization of agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. We've done a few ag tech sort of, webinars and things like that over the last year. You know, and people say, oh, you know, farmers don't take up technology. You know, farmers aren't, you're very slow at adopting technology. I'd probably sort of challenge that because, with mobile phones, every farmer's got like a digital processor right in their pocket, you know, like, yeah. So they're accessing all the technologies that are available to them. And, you know, in terms of buying the technology, I think when people can't sell them and haven't got a good value proposition, I think that's where people throw their hands up in the air and say, our farmers just, you know, they don't adopt technology. And I think it's, you know, just a value proposition to them that you can help with marketing, I suppose, and the copywriting of their story. But yeah, mate, so I think, you know, I think 2021, yeah, it'll be an extraordinary year. And Jack, another sort of aspect of what we're doing here now is also dissemination of information, I suppose. And I came across technology last year that I wouldn't mind sharing with you today. I was just talking to you about it before. So we've got a website called farmertech.io. And anyway, I was at the airport coming back from, this is a business meeting. I used to fly away every second week in 2019 to Brisbane and go and connect to Sydney just to keep things ticking along. Anyway, so I was in the airport and I saw this stand with sunglasses and they were connected to the stand. I thought, oh, these are interesting. So I picked them up and they were audio sunglasses. And I thought, oh, wow, if these work, these would be extraordinarily good. And I'm used to buying sunglasses in the BP and, just getting the hard wearing ones and $20. Anyway, I thought they were quite expensive at $300. So I thought, oh, well, I might buy them. Anyway, it got the better of me. So the next time I went down there, I bought them. And I've had them for about a year. And they're Bose audio sunglasses. And, mate, they are bloody extraordinary for, that's a speaker there.
Yep.
And there's a microphone just underneath them. You charge them just here and there's a control button just there. So it's Bluetooth. It connects to your phone and you can listen to podcasts, but you can listen to music. You can make phone calls. So when you're loading a ute, instead of having to sort of stop the phone call or just wait and hold everyone up, you know, when you got your team just about to go and you might be talking to your accountant or your lawyer, you can have these things on and just keep operating with two hands. So if you're trucking, loading cattle, operating crushers, fencing, mustering, man, I've used them for about a year now and everyone that's seen me with them has wanted a pair. So I negotiated with Bose and Harvey. Sorry, mate.
The Longreach alarm.
Yeah. Pretty much is. You gotta watch those bloody city people, mate. No, only joking. So everyone that sort of seen me with them, has won a pair. So I said, all right, well, I'll just negotiate with Bose and Harvey Norman, because I did an interview with Jerry Harvey last year. And they said, yeah, we'd love to support you. We'll give you a really good price point. So they're not $300 anymore. And anyway, we sold about sort of 50 of these things. And what they do is they use them for podcasts like yours. So instead of, they've got 6 hours battery life. So I just put them on at the start of the day and mate, you've got eye protection as well. And you seem to look after them better than those sort of those ear pods, are they? And they don't get in your ear.
AirPods.
Yeah.
And they don't get in your ear. You don't lose them as much.
You don't put them through the wash. So I thought I'd share that with you this morning. But yeah, all you do is you just press this button. Where are we? There's a camera. That button there, and that will actually connect it. And you can skip songs if you press it twice. You can pause it if you press it once. And if you press it three times, you can go back an episode or whatever. But, mate, I've sold them to truckies, fencing contractors, athletes, I suppose. So anyway, I thought I'd share it with you. They can get through your podcast.
We'll put it into the show notes. That'd be great. Those mustering days. What I want to find out, James, is like, what spurred you on? What spurred you on initially? Like, it's easy enough for farmers to sit back on your 20,000 acres and just run a few sheep and cattle, do the bit of fencing maintenance work. But why AgriHive? And I don't know, what's busting your bubble to get out there a bit more?
But I think it's just like when I started AgriHive, we had the worst drought. Like, it was the worst condition. We had the most cattle ever, like the highest national herd ever. Nobody had any answers. Like, we couldn't process cattle quick enough. We couldn't you couldn't feed them, you couldn't get hay there fast enough. Like, we just got trapped, incredibly trapped. So the reason I sort of kicked off AgriHive was to help to give better, support tools to farming. So you can actually see events happen before they happen. So you could run the scenarios, you could see what impact it's going to have on you. So say I had a system that had, 20,000 beef cattle farmers on there, and they could see their net wealth position. And their business trajectory, and then all of a sudden live export came in and crashed. Well, what could happen then is that could flow through to the reports, and then we could say to our politicians, like Ludwig when he was in there, mate, you've just wiped off $7 billion worth of cattle value because you've closed down live export. Alternatively, if you're going into a drought and you've got a lot of cattle, what happens if you run through drought and feed them, run through that next season with them and have to feed them? Well, you can run those scenarios if you've got the right programs. So that was the motivation for it, mate, just to try and, there were people that were, there were people that were committing suicide after not being able to truck their cattle up here. It was pretty bloody raw. There were people that just had no perceived opportunities. And once you lose your opportunities, well, that's when mental health kicks in. So I was here just, and there was nothing being done. They were pulling out, drought policy from, 1914, it was ridiculous, the response. So I actually presented to Tony Abbott at the time, Prime Minister, and the Ag Minister, who was Barnaby Joyce. And I said, guys, look, they're looking at you for leadership. We're all looking at you guys for leadership. Leadership would be to empower the farmer, not, give handouts and subsidies, which is part of it. But, it would be to actually put opportunities in front of them that they could interact with that could make a difference to them and their family. Because, if you lose the ability to provide for your family or the perception that you can provide for them, mate, the impact's huge. So that's the sort of motivation. You know, the other thing is, you know, we've got global population just extremely, you know, sort of compounding every year. It's like 82 million extra people a year to feed. And you know what sort of impact that would have on your farm if someone said, oh, you've got another 800 sheep to feed this year. So I don't think the awareness of what, you know, what's happening is there. So if we can optimize those farms to handle those extra 800 ewes or the globe to actually handle the extra 82 million people a year, you know, I think that'll be good. Or just give the awareness of what impact we're having and you know, and sort of discuss that, I suppose. That, you know, that might be good if we can build programs to support and optimize and diversify farm businesses. So that's a sort of motivation, mate. And of course at Longreach, you know, income is extreme, income reflects rainfall, so it's extremely variable. So yeah, so I'm just trying to throw out a few different, you know, sort of business models out there to try and, you know, get people provoked and thinking. So we've got what we call a periodic business model up here whereby, you know, no two seasons are the same. So for a period, you've got a business. For a period, you've got a different business. So it's a periodic business model. So, so in terms of, and I'm on the Regional Economic Center of Excellence, you know, trying to, you know, build this up with them. There's a lot of academics there, so we sort of hit our heads against a brick wall a fair few times. But what we try to do is say, all right, well, this is what is happening on ground. This is the operations. This is the activities when it rains and when it doesn't rain. So we need to support businesses during that and transitioning between when it doesn't rain to when it does rain to when it doesn't rain. So to pick up those periods and cycles. And so, you know, when we've got biomass out here, it rains like it is at the moment, we are just flat. We're just trying to capture that and preserve it as much as we can. So whether it's baling hay, whether it's large numbers of adjustment cattle, you know, whether it's, you know, leasing or whether it's trading or, you know, whatever it is, we've just got to convert that biomass into, you know, revenue and do it sustainably. But then when we're in a drought, you know, we don't want to go and feed cattle and just, absolutely wreck the countryside so that we can recover quickly. So, mate. So it's all about just sort of provoking and disrupting and just getting you know, getting different thinking out there. And so if we can do that through, you know, different technologies and different models, you know, that's part of it, I suppose. And hopefully, you know, we can create a good legacy for farming, especially in this area. But, you know, across all Australia, like we can get that sort of, you know, the perception of farming improved, that, you know, we just don't all need handouts and subsidies. We're actually we're quite bloody good. So, that's it, just disrupting and throwing out, you know, different ways of thinking out there.
Absolutely. Well, I pulled a quote from one of your articles when I was studying you. You said, don't wait for government. Like, you can't sit back and wait for government to give you these subsidies and handouts. You want to hand up, but to be proactive in your approach.
Yeah, mate, I think that's what resonates with all the academics that I work with. You know, we're not sitting around waiting for a fund to, you know, like funding to do a project or something. We just get on with it.
Yeah.
That's a last resort. I think government support is like, you know, the absolute last resort. It's needed in some cases, but fundamentally, there's other countries around the world that believe in, you know, empowering, you know, better business models, better business support. I think government and a friend of mine, Professor John Cole, sort of says, yeah, government is a last resort. Because what you get is this mendicant society, which is all about, you know, sort of just when something goes wrong, you put your hand out. And so I just don't believe in that at all. That's why I put the solar farm in. You know, we did that. And years ago we had meat sheep and there were no processes in Australia that would handle our meat sheep. They were just too stuck in the, you know, merino wool and crossbred systems and processes. So they didn't want mendulated fibres. They didn't want to have to change their, you know, their chains and their processes to handle, you know, meat sheep. they are extraordinary how resilient those sheep are, like in drought areas like this here. You know, they're extraordinary, just, just as well as goats are, I suppose. And there's not really a huge supply chain for the goat industry at the moment. It's developing. But yeah, so the processors didn't want them, so we were sending them export over to the Middle East, so out of Port Adelaide from Longreach, and that was exposed in a report. I think it was a current affair or something like that, that we were trucking them so far to get there, and we based all our projections on our budgets on $70 per head, which we were getting for those sheep at that stage, the Damaras and the Norfolks, the meat sheep. And anyway, so it shut overnight. So it was like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do now? We've gone from $70 to these processors not wanting them and giving us massive discounts. I think they're offering anywhere from sort of $8 to $18 for these sheep that, were bloody good. And so I said, well, what are we going to do here? And you'd try and ring the, I'm not sure what government was at that stage, but we couldn't get through and, to turn that around. So I said, righto. So I made a promise. I said, I'll make 20 phone calls a morning to try and establish a network to get a live export out of northern Australia up to Asia, Southeast Asia. And if I could do that, well, then the sheep aren't going as far. It's a lot a lot better for the sheep, and it'll fit in. So anyway, it took me 3 weeks, 20 phone calls, and establishing, relationships. We struck up a deal with a cattle company. We got one pen in a big cattle consignment going over to Indonesia. And so our sheep went over there. The sheep actually put on weight. We didn't lose one, and just showed the resilience of those sheep to get over there. They put on kilos being fed over there, so we did a pretty good job. Anyway, it was 5,000 sheep we sent up there. And no one could believe it. It was the first major consignment of sheep to out of northern Australia. And then from there we just kept on going. So we sold those sheep for $110, because of just the desire over there for protein. So developing on that and the success of that consignment, we ended up sending 3,000 out of Townsville later on. And then we started to sell them via air cargo. So we'd have, sort of cargo planes load up 1,800 sheep at a time and fly them to Malaysia or to the Philippines. And that was extraordinary as well. And then all of a sudden the processors started to pick up the meat sheep appetite. So then all of a sudden they're exporting and the numbers didn't work to keep exporting. So we could turn around and do them internally in the domestic market. So, mate, that sort of just goes to show, like, if maybe if I jumped up and down and banged around and said to the government, this isn't fair, it might have taken 6 months to turn around, but we didn't really have 6 months. So enterprise business is such a good medium for getting things going and done.
Yeah.
And I think, in terms of us building this program, this next stage, I think it's a really good vehicle for, enacting change. And, I sort of had a lot of meetings with ministers and officials in Canberra about, trying to build what we're going to be building. And it's just too much for them. Like, they concentrate on votes and what will get them votes. Once I build it, they're happy to sort of say it's built and it's great, look how good this is. But in terms of investing in it, they've got a lot of pre-existing relationships with universities and their department believe they can build the best solution. And then they've got these large corporate, firms like KPMG and all those guys that sort of profess to knowing ag and doing desktop reviews and building the solutions there. Unless you've really got someone on the ground building that, like, they don't know the impact of it, as you would be well aware. So there's always going to be that disconnect. So, if you wait for, and you know, I mean, trying to get them to, you know, start the momentum up, but it's just not happening. So that's why we just said, all right, let's have a crack. Instead of going through government, government and industry, we'll just have a crack ourselves and get a large investor in that's just going to believe in our vision and support our growth. So that's what we've done, mate. But it's exciting. It's just moving so quickly at the moment, and moving even more quickly with, you know, the likes of your podcast and transferring all that information to people.
Yeah, it's great, like sharing techniques, knowledge, and also giving a bit of a template to other farmers, passing the buck and seeing how we can improve the industry as a whole. What I want to like wind back a bit is, a lot of farmers would be balked by trying to call 20 people each day and every day. But when you look at it, it was only for 3 weeks and you opened up a totally new market for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's some pretty extraordinary psychology around that, mate. So, and some good literature on that, on why people, you know, don't like change. I'm more risk averse now because I've got kids and, you know, want to sort of, make sure that I've got security and income and revenue. Whereas when I was 18, I'd just go, buddy, you know, every time I got, like a pay packet, I'd race down to Brisbane and go and catch up with mates and blow it all. And then come back with my wounds for sort of 3 or 4 weeks and then build up enough to go down. And then I said, all right, well, so that'll change, and all the money that I'd make, I'd put into sheep and trade sheep. So, so that gave me, you know, sort of a little bit more flexibility to when I got away and how much money I had in the kitty. I think people are just, you know, they like doing what they've always done, because that's a system that they're used to and a routine that they're used to actually change it up. It has to be fairly proven before there's adoption there. In agriculture, we found that extension is by, you know, fellow farmers. You know, if 50 farmers are doing this, it makes sense. Like, you know, with these 50 of them, got it, and you got testimonials, people jump at this sort of technology. But initially they're like, oh, that's a bit different. I've already got my Ray-Ban sunnies, or I've already got Oakleys. And then it's got to, you know, there's got to be about 3 touch points to change a little bit. So if 3 people, around them exploded their businesses through doing other things, well, then they'll start looking at it. It's just the ability to take that risk, make that phone call. You know, might not work the first time, but you just get back up and just keep going. So that's why I think Australian farmers are the most resilient in Australia, because we get a drought, we've got to respond. We've got to turn around and jump up and say, righto, well, how are we going to make this work? Because, there's a lot at stake. Our farms, our businesses are our homes in most circumstances, so we have to fight to stay alive. And whether you fight to get government assistance or subsidies, that's one form of it, or whether you fight to diversify your business, that's another fight. So I think we're, you know, in terms of farming, we're pretty punch happy. But that's the way I approached it. That was probably just because of the external stimulus were forcing me that way to say, all right, what do I do with these animals? You know, how do I capture this opportunity? Another thing I'd probably suggest is, Jack, a lot of people need to know, but they really need to know their statement of position. Like, they need to know exactly where their business is, what available equity and capital they have. And then it's all about deal flow. So, So, I mean, you know, if you're ready, if your business is ready to take on next door, you know, and you've got all your equity and your capital allocated to new opportunities, and you've just got it sitting there in a facility, you can actually have those discussions to expand the business or take those opportunities or just pull the trigger to say, righto, I'll buy those cattle. But if you don't, and you don't have your finances organized and your capital and you don't have your house in order, the next door neighbor or your mate down the road who does have that can buy those cattle and make that, you know, $250 trade, you know, in a week. You know, that, I had a mate the other day that bought cattle from Mount Isa, took them down to Gundy, and the 8 decks that he had on there, the agent already had an extra $250 a head for him if he wanted to sell them in transit. So, you know, he was there, he found a good deal, he could act on it, and it's all about getting the business in a position to be able to do that. So, that's sort of a little bit of the thread that we're trying to pursue with this new sort of development in AgriHive or PharmaTech. So it's just all about capturing opportunities when they're there and being able to act on them.
So that would be your one piece of farms advice to diversify for farmers?
Yeah, man, it's all about deal flow. So the only way you get deal flow is to get your business in order and have your finances ready, have your facilities in place, and know your statement of position. So it's a bit hard for them at the moment because it's a combination of an accountant, your own sort of management accounting. But that's what we're trying to bring. We're trying to bring that that awareness so we can get more deals over the table and get access to finance and capital a lot quicker.
Absolutely. Well, James, thank you very much for coming on the podcast for today. Very first episode for 21. And it's a good way to kick it off into diversification. A question we ask every guest is, who would you like to hear on the Farms Advice podcast and why?
But I'd be interested to hear you interviewed, actually. Someone do a reverse interview of you to see what you're up to, see what your aspirations are there's a lot below the surface there that you're doing this for that no one's really exposed yet. So, I think what you're doing is great, and love for people to know a little bit more about what you're doing and why you're doing it. So Jack, I'd say you'd be great to interview. It's funny, I thought last year when I interviewed Jerry Harvey, it'd be the most amazing interview in history for ag and ag tech. But he's pretty stubborn. He didn't want to talk about what he didn't want to. So he talked about what he wanted to talk about on his terms, and I didn't quite get enough out of it. But you always get some good takeaways from anyone. I'd probably say later this year it'd be good to get someone to interview you. I don't know who it would be, but it'd be interesting, I think, Jack. So credit to you, and thanks so much for having me on today.
Thanks, mate. That was a bit of a flip. I didn't expect that, but should be good just to delve into what I'm up to here and the bit of the marketing, what's behind it for Farms Advice for 2021.
Absolutely. If there's anyone else that I think you should interview, it would be John Cole, who's a mentor of mine, Professor John Cole. He's got a really great backstory about agriculture and farming.
Yep.
And he's really good, underlying theme about trying to build resilience in rural Australia and using agriculture as a sort of the guiding light. So, if it's on you, probably John Cole.
Absolutely. So how can we get in touch with you, James, through AgriHive?
So I've got a Twitter handle, james.jumbuck.
Yep.
Or I think it's James Jumbuck. That's what it is, Twitter handle. So I think, what is your listeners mainly sort of communicating on? Is it Twitter?
Twitter's a big one for farmers.
Yeah. So, Twitter, James... James Jumba. So that's good. LinkedIn, James L. Walker on LinkedIn. it's becoming bigger and bigger in agribusiness, so that's quite good. And then Instagram, just James Walker, I think it is. But yeah, if you want those sunnies, you said that we might put something with the communication, so that's pharmatech.io.
Perfect. Darius, we'll have all the links in the show notes, but thanks again for coming on the show, James. Have a good rest of day. Talk soon.
Good luck with everything down Dubbo. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.